Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and on the political left, State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, Natalie.
On the political right, we have Holly Richardson, the Salt Lake Tribune columnist. She's sitting in for Dan McKay, who is a candidate for the Utah Senate and is in a blackout period because the ballots are out, and we're not going to have him on the program until after the election. So, Holly, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's just jump right to these elections. And the debates of the Utah Debate Commission have been flying. We had a big one this week between the most competitive race, I think, happening in the state, Representative Mia Love and Mayor Ben McAdams. Holly, did you watch it?
Only parts of it, actually.
Okay, how about you, Jim? Were you able to tune in?
Every second of it.
I think I caught about 45 minutes of it, so we got a good mix. Holly, what'd you think?
Well, I mean, debates are always interesting, right? Because you have to try and get your message across in short little bits. And I'm not sure that debates actually change people's minds very often. But I think this debate showed how tight the race actually is. It's a little testier than some other debates. And I think there's really some attempt by both candidates to show clear differentiation, because that's what matters at the end, right? Is can you convince enough of those swing voters in the middle to vote for you?
I work at the University of Utah. I work a lot with Jason Perry, and he helps administer the Hinckley poll. Talk to him today. 46-46 is what he's saying on the two. And so that, what, leaves 8% undecided?
Right.
So it is a race for those undecided votes, Jim.
It's really hard for me to be objective. And I think people see, even if they're trying to be objective, they see kind of what they want to see. So from that filter, I saw Mia Love, who simply does not get out in public very often where she's challenged. She talked about having 85 debates. Well, I mean, or 85 town hall meetings. I don't know if you call like a staff meeting, maybe if you call that a public meeting, but that's beside the point. I just thought Ben won by a lot, and I'm sure people on the other side, but something may have emerged from it. I don't know if you read this week, the column from Lee Davidson of the Tribune. Mia Love boldly said, you know that million-dollar lie that Ben McAdams is telling about me? Well, I got a phone call from the Federal Election Commission, and it's wrong.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Lee Davidson called the Federal Election Commission, and they said, uh-uh. We never talked to her. We haven't said that. We don't know. In an election this close, if it's a lie, then that, who knows?
Yeah. I'll tell you something else that will really affect this election is obviously turnout, but the turnout because of the initiative on marijuana.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
I think that Romney won't have as much of a draw to bring people out because he's so far ahead, unlike in the presidential election.
Right.
But the marijuana for medicinal purposes is going to bring out the young population, and that will favor Mayor McAdams, in my judgment.
Yeah, I think there's truth in that, and it's maybe not even that just one initiative. There are several initiatives that I think will drive turnout, but they're typically a population that's going to favor Mayor McAdams, I think. I mean, I know that there's people who are worried about that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick with what I predicted 6 months ago, which is this is not going to be decided by these two candidates. They're both going to have a well-funded, well-meaning race. But it's going to be the national player, and I suspect that this is going to be one of those terrific wave elections that we see every now and then, and that it's out of Mia's hands, and Ben McAdams is going to win by 6 or 7%.
That's interesting. Holly, how are you predicting this one?
I think Mia will pull it off, but okay. I do think it's very close. I think it's probably too close to call, but I don't think I don't think either candidate will win by 6 points.
Yeah, I think it'll be a nail biter as well. I will say that I really tire in this particular race, and it's happened before, where they're constantly talking about Nancy Pelosi. I think that is a symbol of a race that's out of control, because she's just not that relevant to this
state.
One
of the things that's interesting to me is it did not work when we on the Republican side tried to do the Matheson equals Pelosi a number of years ago.
Yeah.
It didn't work. So I'm not sure why we think it's going to work again. Because to your point, she's not that relevant, and Mayor McAdams is not a Pelosi kind of Democrat. So
yeah, pretty interesting.
Not only if I can on that on that topic. A few years ago, I think it was a PAC or somebody put all of these Pelosi equals Matheson or Matheson equals Pelosi signs everywhere. And it was a lot of them, except they were on the south end of the valley, not up here because it would appeal. So I had a constituent call and say, finally, Jim Matheson is standing for something. Where do I get one of those signs? It's about time.
Yeah, you get strange things in politics. Let's close out this segment by talking about the Wilson-Romney race, in part because that debate has also happened. But there's been some interesting things. You know, one is I have watched Jenny Wilson as she's really shown her competencies and how she's really made the case that for something that is this significant of a race, meaning you get a 6 years in the United States Senate, why is there only one debate? And especially when the person that has this has been in there 40 plus years, mm-hmm. you know, like, why wouldn't we have more open discussion? I thought that was a pretty good point that she's making and wanted to see what you guys think.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the reasons we have even one debate is because the last senatorial election cycle for this particular seat, there were no debates until it was such a shoo-in that I think there was finally an agreement, right, that, okay, well, I'll sit down and do a pretend debate. So I think the debate commission was formed so that we could have at least one debate yeah. per election cycle. And I understand the concept that maybe one isn't enough. But at the same time, that's always what the underdog wants, or almost always yeah. the underdog, right? Who says, debate me, debate me, debate me. And
Holly, the thing that came across my mind was after the Kavanaugh hearings and we saw the makeup of the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just pause there and let people imagine those images. You know, someone like Jenny Wilson represents something really new and fresh.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that she could win this, but I'm saying that if more people could see her, it might open their minds to what she would represent. And I'll just throw out a statistic. Dianne Feinstein is 85 years old and running for reelection. So think about this for a minute. Right? Okay, Jim, close us out here.
It is really, it's the system. It's total corruption. And it's not against one party or another. It is a system that is sick because it costs tens of millions of dollars to run for the U.S. Senate. A challenger in another state, not like Utah, it's a tremendous impediment. And the public would be much better served by having these people that use the airwaves to make a lot of money, the public airwaves, forced into allowing more free time as this yeah. incredible thing is decided, these incredible elections.
Well, and the other thing that's crossed my mind, I've never been a term limits person, and particularly at the state level, but when I see the composition of the U.S. Senate,
yeah,
I start to think, you know, let's try it.
I became a term limits person a while ago. When
did you?
Yeah, I did, because I heard the argument, well, we'll decide at the ballot box. And then when I saw the re-election rates for incumbents, it really, I think, invalidates that point. It's extremely rare for an incumbent to be upseated. I mean, upended, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I believe in term limits, and I think that ought to be on the ballot next time.
Well, and what you're doing is you're denying. I mean, I look at, like, I'm just going to pick on Dianne Feinstein, or maybe I'm an ageist when I do this and everything, but you know, she's denying the opportunity of a younger person to be, you know, to have that seat. And right. I think the younger generation, when they look at the U.S. Senate, it's got to be going,
right.
These
and,
people
and,
don't
and
know
you
what
can
I
go
think.
In, you can go in with great ideas, but after a period of time, you need some new eyeballs on the problems. I really think you do.
Yeah. It's ego.
Yeah. Well, too much agreement on both sides of the aisle. We'll try and liven it up in the second segment with some sexier topics. But Holly Richardson on the right, Jim DeBacchus on the left, I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Hi, this is Holly Richardson on the right.
Jim DeBacchus proudly on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are talking about politics and public affairs in Utah. It is election year, election month, nearabouts. We're within 21 days, I believe. Question one, that is the gas tax increase, motor fuel tax increase of 10 cents a gallon to help fund more roads and mostly education. 70% of the money will go towards education. Apparently, it is opposed by 51% with 45% supporting it. I think this is going to be a tough one, but personally, I support this question.
I support it, but you know, I have to hold my nose. This group of good Republicans, the kind of corporate chamber Republicans, came together, and they so negotiated, they so wanted the love of the legislature that they came up with a cockamamie formula that's only going to bring $180 million. They should have stuck with what they had, which was $600 or $700 million, just gone straight on and said, this is what we want to do. This hybrid where some of the money's going to local transportation and take it out of the gas tax and then come on, vote for it, but do it with your nose held.
Holly, do you support this one, and what's your commentary on it?
Well, I mean, the comment, of course, for many people on the right is we don't support tax increases.
Yeah.
And it's a talking point that's used often. Think of the kids, right? So I live down by Lone Peak High School, and as I drive by on my way up to Salt Lake, I see a big sign that says, vote for it. It will bring in $348,000 to this particular high school,
wow,
right?
That's clever.
And, yeah. Yeah, right.
I hope it's not the school putting it out there. I hope it's the neighbor.
I hope it is, right? And I can't tell for sure because it's right across the street from the school, and it has a big number on it. And so, I mean, again, I think there's so many issues on the ballot this year that I think there's a lot of people who are going to either not vote on them at all because they don't understand, or they're, you know, they're just going to say, I don't really know. And so they're just going to pick yay or nay. I don't know.
I heard a political. He's going to make you answer the question here.
That's a really
like Leslie Stahl.
That's a really good question. I think I probably will vote for it. But I do. I mean, I have a little bit of heartburn about it.
In the political middle, I would like to say that this is the right type of tax increase. So speaking to the right, because people who drive don't pay the full costs of their driving. Their gas tax does not cover the cost of the roads, and they put pollutants into the air that they don't pay for that you know, make us all sick. And so we want to tax things we want less of. And by taxing more on the motor fuel tax, we will get less driving, less air pollution. And I think it's the right tax to raise if you're going to raise one.
Yeah, but they're not just raising that. They're also raising the sales tax, which is the worst thing to raise.
So this is for Medicaid expansion, which we're going to get to, which is Prop 3.
But part of the question one also is from sales tax.
You and I see that differently. But one other point, though, and I think Holly's right on this. I remember a political scientist once telling me that what people don't understand, they vote no on.
Yeah. So. And I think we saw that. It's been years now, but on the voucher question, if you can cause enough confusion and have people feel like they aren't sure and they don't know, they're going to vote no.
Vote no. Yeah. So Proposition 2 is the cannabis for medicinal purposes. Yeah. This one, the most recent poll, and this is after the compromise and the announcement that there'll be a special session on it, they're still showing 52% support, 47% oppose. I'm impressed. I didn't think the support would hold so strong once there was a better solution, which I think there is in the compromise.
Part of it, I think people don't trust the shady characters that went against. Look, people worked hard. There were hundreds of thousands of people who put it on the ballot.
I think you're too much in the weeds. I think most people don't know and they don't care.
I don't think so.
I think there's every reason to believe that the legislature and the people who came up with a compromise, when it comes right down to it, they're going to go, oh, the people voted against it. We're not going to go down there.
I don't think
there's at least 50-50.
Utah Medical Association and the interfaith community and some of these, you know, patient groups are shady.
They're not. Look what they've done. Let the people vote. There's not been a hearing. There has not been a hearing on that. The people haven't had their say, and the legislature is going to take what this group came and said, okay, we're going to substitute what's on the ballot before the vote, and we're going to put that in there. Well, they could at least pretend to have a debate about it.
The ballot initiative isn't that well written, to be honest. So
when they have the special session, it will be debated, and there will be a lot.
It won't. They'll announce it the day of, like they do in a lot of special sessions. There's no public hearings. They will just.
I'll just give our listeners one point of reference. On the ballot initiative, you basically have, you know, all of these places that can sell and dispense medical marijuana. Yeah. And they have some, you know, it has to be a certain distance from a school and whatnot. But there can be hundreds and hundreds of them around the state. Under the compromise, it's going to go through the local health departments, which I think is a much better way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the language is that well written. And I know that it was put together by citizens, but if it were to go in front of legislative attorneys, I mean, I think they would have some revisions to do. And that's one of the issues with coming up with the Citizens Initiative, right?
Well, so. One more thing. We're using what's called the pharmacy model. It's in one other state, Louisiana. They passed that 3 years ago. They still haven't dispensed medical marijuana to one person. This is a trick. I don't believe that they are serious.
Jim thinks
about
this is a trust
really,
problem. Yeah.
I don't believe that they're serious about getting this done. These are the people who hated it from day one, and this is what they've come up with. Don't vote. There's no reason to vote yes on two.
Well,
baloney.
I think it'll be. I think in the end it'll end up being fairly close. I think that there's enough independent-minded Utahns that they'll. I mean. They'll do whatever they want. They're going to do, but there are people who are going to listen to the power players on the compromise, and they're going to say, "Okay, well, since they took a stand, then I'll go ahead and vote
no." And I think we have turned the corner in this state in acknowledging that there is reason to have cannabis for medicinal purposes, and we're going to make it available, but we're going to make it on a very limited basis and walk slowly in towards that path. Jim, Proposition 3, this is the Medicaid expansion, the Hinckley poll showing 59% support, 33% opposed. It looks like we're going to get full-blown Medicaid expansion in this state.
Yeah, finally, we're going to join the rest of civilization, and we're going to take our $800 million that we've turned down in 2014, 15, 16, 17, and 18 to help our poorest citizens get affordable health care. I got to admire the legislature. They've kept their mouth shut, but woe unto them for being so silent for so long. They knew all along, most of them, that this was the right thing to do. Utah taxpayers paid in, and unlike Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado and Nevada and that liberal bastion Montana, for goodness sakes, that have been taking Utah's share, we're going to cover 160,000 poor people. Amen. The Koch brothers are here, though. They're running spots, and who knows where it's going to go.
Just so our listeners know, this will raise your sales tax by 0.15%. So if it's 6%, it'll become 6.15%. So every little transaction you make will go pay for this. But
well, it shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it is.
I think one of the arguments that it's all in the framing. To my mind, right? So if you say, in fact, I just read a survey or a study recently that said if you frame it as welfare, people will be opposed to it, generally speaking. But if you frame it as helping a family and this is how it helps, then people are supportive, right? People are compassionate in Utah and people want to do what's right and they want to be able to pay their part. But if you frame it as, you know, we've got all this money and we're going to take money out of your pocket, then there's more resistance. But when you frame it as we have these needy people in our state and they're falling through the cracks and it looks like this, and we're going to add a little bit of an increase, people, I think people are willing to step up and say, I'm going to pay in.
And it will make Jim smile, but I think I'm going to support it, Jim.
Oh, good.
Even with my comments. Okay, let's go to some quick local news that'll be interesting. Governor Gary Herbert declaring a drought emergency in Utah. And if you looked at the data here, it's really interesting. 16 of Utah's top 49 reservoirs are less than 20% full, and we have 8 that are less than 5% full.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a bad summer.
Yes, we had. And we had low snowpack and hot, no precip summer. I don't like this. I mean, I like that the governor's declared the drought, but I don't like seeing reservoirs that aren't full, and it plays with my sense of, you know, prosperity in our state.
Yeah.
You know, look, we need leadership. We're crying out for leadership for so many years. Now, listen to this. We're the second driest state, and we're number one for water use. So we have all of these water conservancy districts, 42 of them across the state, that just love trillion-dollar deals. They can't wait to build the pipeline in St. George and the Bear River diversion, and they love those multi-gazillion-dollar things. You know what? What we need to do is we need to become Las Vegas, recognize that we're in the desert, and cut consumption dramatically And we won't need all these trillion-dollar things. People in Washington County, wait till they see what that pipeline costs them or spread across the state. Common sense leadership that says that's ridiculous that we are number one in water usage, and that's where we are.
If I remember the numbers correctly, though, 80% is agricultural, and we need to grow stuff here, right? We want to eat. And so we can xeriscape our front yards and we can be use drip irrigation for our gardens. I get that and I support that. But you have a large, like we want to eat in Utah. We like that. And so when
Holly,
most
of
it's
go,
being spent on agriculture, I mean, that's.
Would you go in the political middle and say, you know, I'm okay with the water for our orchards and for some of these high value crops, but why are we spending so much on water for alfalfa and hay that we export to China?
Yeah, I
that's
mean,
like those, exporting our water.
Those are, but those are all. I mean, I think that's all part of the question. And I know that growth has been a huge issue, and it's not just water. Although water, I think, is critically important, right? What was the old joke in the Wild Wild West, right? You fight over, you drink whiskey.
Yeah, whiskey
and
is
fight
for drinking.
Water.
Water is for fighting.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a huge issue. So is transportation. And in fact, when we get to our gripes, my gripe is about the transportation where there's not even accidents, and it's now taking me 90 minutes to get from my home to the U.
Yeah.
And it used to take 45.
What about another local news? New Yorker restaurant shutting down. That's a sad day for a lot of us that have enjoyed that as an option, a real quiet place to get really high quality food. And
I went once.
You're not.
Years ago, I'm sorry for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it represented something in our community.
Sure.
Because of the people.
It's kind of an icon.
Owned it and the types of transactions that occurred there. It was a place where you'd go someplace special. If you want to take your daughter someplace special for her birthday, say, let me take you to the New Yorker.
They were really the first kind of, you could bring anybody in the world there and they would have been impressed. I'm so, so sorry to see it go.
Do you have a wonderful memory there, Jim?
Yeah, I do. I used to do a television show with a guy named John Prince, who was really rich, and I was making $600 a month. And after every show, we would go there and have a drink, and then we would invite our guests and alternate paying the check. So one day we had John Price on, the developer and gazillionaire. It was my turn to pick up the check. I was from BYU. I didn't really drink much. And I mean, I wasn't going to BYU then, you know, I never got wine. Well, I knew it was my turn. Price ordered a $300 bottle of wine, and then Price was ordering it, and the kitchen was closed, and they ordered this exotic stuff. The check came as about $900, and I knew it was my turn. And I looked over at John, and he said, is it your turn or mine? And I said, John, I can't remember exactly.
I think it's yours.
But I think it's yours. I remember that moment.
That's a pretty good memory. That's a pretty good memory.
I'm so sorry to see you go, New Yorker.
Yeah. Hey, we better go to gripes. Holly, you start us out if you've got yours ready to go.
Yeah, sure. My gripe is just the transportation. I mean, just normal commute time now in the mornings is taking me double what it used to take even like a year ago. And it's not construction and it's not accidents. So that's my big gripe.
Kim?
Mine is Reyes and Herbert are at it. They filed papers in the district court in Washington, D.C., spent $500,000. They finally said why they want Bears Ears and Grand Escalante shrunk. They said it interferes with the state's mining interests. Shame on you, guys.
Interesting. For my gripe, I'm going to answer a listener's request about a Scott Howell op-ed that dealt with the Cottonwood Mall mixed-use development, where Hal made the point that this range of housing types would help with housing affordability. And the listener commented that with single-family homes from 450,000 to 1 million, how is that helping with housing affordability? I just have to say that to have a home in Holiday for $450,000, that's rare these days. So that's point number one. That's not that expensive in this housing market, believe it or not. But the key is the apartments there. And they have several hundred, I think it's like 650 apartments that have been proposed as that. So the affordable housing isn't so much the ownership things, but it's the apartments. So that would be the reason. And I hope, I don't know, this is before the Supreme Court right now, the Utah Supreme Court, because of the petition that was trying to override what the city council ruled on. But I'm really hopeful that they will get that piece of property developed. That's my hope.
Well, I lived in Holiday for a short time, and I we all have to recognize in the Valley, to solve Holly's gripe and yours and everybody's, we got to start growing up and not out, or where are we going to put this, doubling the population?
Yeah,
I love it. Well, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner with Holly Richardson and Jim DeBacchus. Our program is produced by Emily Means. Make sure you vote. Thanks for listening.